we need to press pause again. That's why, once more, we need to stay home and avoid all non-essential travel. Gatherings are prohibited in red zones and are to be avoided in orange zones. And it's important to keep following the everyday health measures. Let's press pause again to curb the spread. Learn more at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Let's continue to protect ourselves properly. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, Feminist Waves, brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy.
The Dragon Root Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragon Root understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance.
We meet every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy and welcome anyone interested in learning or producing feminist media to join. No skills required.
You're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. On today's show, we had the chance to speak with Nelly from Dawn. Dawn is the Disabled Women's Network of Canada, and they recently released a report called Girls Without Barriers, an intersectional feminist analysis of girls and young women with disabilities in Canada. Here to talk more about Dawn and the report is Nelly.
My name is Nelly Basili, and I am I've been working with Dawn Canada for a little over 2.5 years now. I'm the Director of Youth Initiatives and International Relations. Dawn Canada, so the Disabled Women's Network of Canada, or Dawn for short, is a feminist and cross-disability rights organization. So we have been defending the rights of girls and young women with disabilities for 35 years now. And Dawn Canada is explicitly a feminist organization that works in the disability sector. But we also bridge the gaps between the disability sector that may not have a gender lens and the feminist sector that may not have a disability lens. And how we do that and what that means is we do that through education, we do that through research, we do that through, partnering with organizations and helping them with their programs. We do that through advocacy and policy at more, I guess, higher levels, at governmental levels, but also advocacy with other organizations in various sectors.
Now you touched on this a little bit, but what are Dawn's key principles, and what lens does Dawn examine inequalities and discrimination?
Yeah, sure. So obviously we have the prism of looking at things through an intersectional feminist lens. And what that means is that we want to center the most marginalized in all of the work that we do. Not only center the most marginalized, but also add a disability in it, specifically a cross-disability lens. So if we break that down from an intersectional feminist perspective, we really want to center those who are from, you know, communities that have been historically marginalized. So that means Black, Indigenous, and people of color. When we add the cross-disability lens, we also look at, disability from a wide spectrum, and that means any form of disability, and not in a medicalized way, and giving people the agency, women the agency to self-identify, and not requiring any formal diagnoses. And moving away from the medical model and medical systems that, you know, have often been very detrimental and traumatic for girls and young women with disabilities and for people in general with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell us about the Girls Without Barriers project?
Sure. So Girls Without Barriers as a project is has been running for a few years now, and the aim of Girls Without Barriers really is to work with organizations that are what we call girl-serving organizations that run programs for girls and really help them in the process of making their programming for girls more inclusive and respectful of the realities of girls with disabilities. And what that means is we look at things from a structural level. We look at things from how ableism affects, you know, what kind of programming, what kind of services are offered. And what we find is that if we look at it from a structural level, we work with organizations to also look at, you know, who is on their boards, who is on their staff, do they, you know, understand how ableism works within those structures as well, so that they are then better able to do their programming with girls with disabilities. So we really want to look at things from root causes, from structural levels, in order to help the programming be better and more inclusive for girls with disabilities. And we've been working with different organizations. For example, we've worked with Rock Camp for Girls. Mm-hmm. We've also worked with Black Girls Summer Workshop, which are both camps for girls in the summertime, and they run programs for girls, and they're really wonderful programs and partners, because they really want to look at things from an intersectional feminist lens. They really want to look at things from a disability lens and better understand how they can, you know, get at things like ableism and explain it to kids, and be more inclusive of the different needs of girls with disabilities who may want to be part of their programs. And we really encourage them to do all of these things, you know, by helping them from recruitment to all the way to programming that they do. And within that, Girls Without Barriers, we also have a research component. And this is where our research report, you know, Girls Without Barriers, an intersectional feminist lens, you know, that looks at the situation of girls and young women with disabilities in Canada, also comes about.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit more about this, the research component, and if or what were some challenges that you encountered while conducting the study?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Girls Without Barriers as a research project, the research component of this project came about because, you know, we actually a year ago released a report, another report called More Than a Footnote. And in that report, we already, you know, had the data that confirmed that women with disabilities are among the most marginalized in Canadian society. And what that means is they, you know, face multiple societal barriers to accessing things like education, employment, health, reproductive rights, and are also more at risk of experiencing things like gender-based violence. But what that research also showed is the lack of data about girls with disabilities. So, you know, Girls Without Barriers is really, as a research project, is really a first step in starting to bridge that gap. So over the course of this research, we found it difficult to access Canadian statistics about girls with disabilities. So, you know, Girls Without Barriers as a research report really set out to not only review literature that already exists in the form of, you know, academic articles and community/activist-based reports on the rights of girls and young women with disabilities, but it also intentionally set out to better understand the realities of girls with disabilities who not only have to deal with ableism as a system, but also racism, colonialism, sexism, heterosexism, and other systems of oppression, and how they intersect and affect their lives. You know, I also want to clarify that this report, you know, is a first step. It's not an exhaustive analytical work. We consider this report as a first exploratory research project that really did look at the existing literature as a first step towards the development of, you know, more qualitative studies carried out by and for young women with disabilities. There is a dearth of information that directly talks from the perspective of girls with disabilities. So another thing that we mention and highlight in this report is we really need to move away from this adult perspective on girls. This adult perspective over time, it reinforces this infantilization of girls, and we're really trying to move away from that. And so, you know, we strongly urge everyone to listen to girls, to listen to their perspectives. Girls with disabilities have so much to bring about, and yet their perspectives are not sufficiently put out there without that lens, you know, that is an adult lens. Because even the research that we looked at is from an adult perspective. The starting points are always from the adult perspective. So we're really trying to bring that to the fore and move away from that.
Hmm. In the report, you also take time to examine the increasing incarceration of girls and young women with disabilities. And you also emphasize that incarceration isn't limited to the imprisonment of people following court decisions. Can you talk to us a little bit more about how the erasure of this issue?
Sure. So maybe to start with, I can talk about what we mean by sort of our definition of incarceration, if you will. Mm-hmm. We, you know, as we are in an ableist society, disability is intrinsically linked with incarceration. And within, you know, the analyses that we work with at Dawn, we consider that incarceration is not limited to imprisonment of people following court decisions only, you know. So we broaden that definition of incarceration to include things like placement of people, consenting or not, or otherwise, into institutions that really limit their human rights, mm-hmm. that limit their living conditions and their dignity. You know, we have to remember that historically, Western societies included people, excluded rather, people with disabilities from the public sphere by limiting their access and, you know, or placing them in institutions. And so it is from that perspective that we look at incarceration. But more specifically, you know, we live also in a racist and colonialist society, and incarceration, in this case, via court decision, has a singular impact on racialized women, on Indigenous women. So just to clarify what we mean by that. Now, the way we looked at incarceration as well is how does it affect, for example, children when we talk about things like, and girls specifically, when we talk about things like school to prison pipelines, and how girls with disabilities who are racialized, so, you know, coming from racialized communities, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, are more affected by this, especially racialized girls with disabilities. The other thing that we looked at is how incarceration linked with migratory status affects girls with disabilities. And what we found is that the rate there was a report by the Canadian Council for Refugees that found in 2018-2019 that 118 children were detained in immigration detention. And the findings with that all indicate that the conditions of incarceration really are detrimental to the development of children. You know, they affect their mental health, they affect things like increasing anxiety and depression in children who have been through these detention conditions. And so it goes against human rights and protocols internationally that Canada has signed on to.
Were there any surprises that came up in the study, or was there, or I guess, and is there anything in the study that you feel everyone should know or take away?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that what we focalize on is, again, the lack of data that is available on girls with disabilities. The statistical data that is compiled does not look at the intersections of race and gender for girls with disabilities. And that is a huge lack that needs to be gapped. And that means, you know, having things like governments at the, Canadian government at the federal level do a better job of collecting these kinds of data, because they're important. Not collecting this data further invisibilizes girls and young women with disabilities. As it pertains to, you know, findings in the report that I think are really important to note, we note that girls and young women with disabilities face obstacles in accessing inclusive and empowering sex education. Given the various data that we've collected in the report, we also know that girls and young women with disabilities facing different systems of oppression are at higher risk of having their reproductive rights hampered and of being sterilized without consent. The literature also specifically addressing two-spirit, lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, intersex, asexual, aromantic, pansexual, and more young people with disabilities, you know, calls out, among other things, the imposition of gender norms and sexual identities. So that means, that gender and sexual and physical norms imposed by an ableist society also have major consequences on the self-esteem of girls and young women with disabilities. And when we talk about, you know, things like body image, the research shows that the negative effects of beauty standards that are set, again, by an ableist and sexist society. The participation of girls and young women with disabilities in things like leisure and sports activities have significant positive impacts on their self-esteem. But the report shows that despite the importance of their participation in these activities, girls and young women with disabilities, you know, still remain underrepresented. Accessibility is still a major barrier. And, from our collaborations to make programs for girls more inclusive, what I talked about earlier with the Girls Without Barriers project, shows us that there's a tremendous amount of work that still remains to be done in creating more awareness about ableism and how it functions in order to better serve, you know, the needs of girls and young women with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that work that needs to be done, the report has recommendations and calls for action. Can you speak a bit to that?
Yeah, sure. So, the report, we have recommendations for government, for advocacy groups and for human rights organizations in Canada to, you know, take action to ensure, you know, that girls are again at the center of our concerns, especially when it comes to disability. So we have a lot of recommendations, but just to name a few. So for governments, you know, we want government to collect data on girls in Canada using an intersectional feminist and cross disability analysis and make that data publicly available. We want government to consult girls with disabilities and guarantee their self-representation in decision-making spheres and in research, which they are, you know, the first concern. When it comes to education, we want government to make teaching establishments universally accessible. It is unacceptable that in Canada in 2020, there are still inaccessible establishments for education that limit the education of girls with disabilities. We also are asking for the development of national awareness and training programs for teachers and students to educate them about the various systems of oppression that I've mentioned, including, you know, a better understanding of what ableism means. When it comes to, you know, sexuality and gender identity, we want governments to develop and standardize positive, inclusive, emancipatory sex education in Canada that really moves away from, you know, the adult perspective I mentioned earlier, in order to center the experiences and realities of girls and young women with disabilities. And that goes in hand in hand with, you know, to subsidize the development of educational materials for parents, for health and school professionals, on, you know, the sexuality and reproductive rights of girls and young women with disabilities. And the list goes on and on and on.
Ultimately, what impact do you hope that this report has more broadly?
Yeah, well, we really would love that people better understand the realities of girls with disabilities who are most marginalized. We deliberately took an intersectional feminist lens in talking about this report. So we want people to have better knowledge of this report, read it, and understand that when we talk about girls with disabilities, they're not a homogenous group. Mm-hmm. Girls with disabilities, you know, come with a complexity of identities and of systems of oppression that affect them. So when we did this report, we also illustrated the report, and we worked with an artist who is themselves a queer Black person with a disability to embody, you know, what it means to have representation of girls with disabilities. The images we see in our report are not images that we see in mainstream media, and that needs to change, because in order to affect, you know, all these things like self-esteem and that girls with disabilities feel like they matter and are empowered, they need to see themselves represented in those images that we see in the media. So we want to start to change the culture and shift, you know, those ableist ideas of who young women with disabilities and girls with disabilities are, but also have them at the center of the decisions that will affect their lives.
Nelly, thanks so much for your articulate and enlightening answers. If people want to learn more or get involved, where can they go?
Sure. So in order to read our report, you will find it on the Dawn Canada website, and that's at www.dawncanada.net. I also encourage folks to go and follow us on social media. So if you go to Facebook, for example, and you type Disabled Women's Network, Réseau d'Action des Femmes Handicapées Canada, you will find us and you give us a like, and keep following the information that we put out there as it pertains to girls and young women with disabilities.
Perfect. Thanks so much again for chatting with us today.
My grief is sleeping like sand on chasma. Take this circle of free.
Once again, that was Nelly from Dawn Canada. Up next is from the Dragon Root Archives, our interview with Tiffany Ashuna, a local spoken word artist. Tiffany Ashuna is a Mi'kmaq Métis with bloodlines in Abiquit. She graduated with joint honors in Indigenous Studies and Anthropology from McGill last June, and wrote a thesis on Indigenous language revitalization. Tiffany believes in the spring of an Indigenous language and art renaissance, and she works hard to live her life by these words, currently learning to speak both Mi'kmaq and Inuktitut, to raise her son, speaking the languages of all his ancestors and creating poetry and music in these languages to share with them for future generations. Joining us live in studio today is spoken word performance. No, it's Tiffany Ashuna with a spoken word performance. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on today.
Would you like to start with a little performance for us?
Sure. This piece is called Not the Indian You Had in Mind, and I wrote it when I was pregnant in the bush outside of Yellowknife. And it was really my reflections on everything that I had been learning at Dachinta Bush University and also on Glenn Coulthard's book. So I was thinking a lot about how he was talking about resentment as a form of love, a deep love that we have for our communities, because we wouldn't be so angry or so resentful if we didn't love our community so profoundly. So from that, I tried to think of all of the amazing individuals that I had in my life and the things that they are doing every single day for our resistance. You know me as Maina, as Tonto, as Tiger Lily. You know me as fictive or a dream catcher in your city. But listen to me closely as I'll tell you who I am. The one you have in mind? Well, I'm not that Indian. I'm a university graduate, a mother, and a daughter. I have bush skills, and I'm proud to say the land's my alma mater. I am strong and opinionated and boisterous and loud, though my features might not fit your schema if you look for me in a crowd. I'll tell you who I am. No need to be interpolated by you, by your state or legislature, or your staunch Supreme Court crew. There are many things that make me, like determination and my drive. With my travel and adventure, it's a wonder I'm still alive. I am not alone in my description of being indigenous. There are many more just like me who to you are antithesis to your stereotypes and imaginations of who we may just be, but that won't efface our understanding of our own esprit. I am the water polo Olympian, the Stanley Cup winner, the woman with the feather. I am standing in front of armed forces to protect the land I put together. I don't know more from a Twitter feed. I danced on your shopping complex that is on top of what used to be sacred grounds, now desecrated by your annex. I am proudly waving my flag as I block your traffic lane, because to disrupt your daily commute's the only way I can arraign you from standing idly by while brothers and sisters are murdered or missing. I will not abstain from liberating us from this compound where we are unrighteously detained. I am your janitor, your plumber, your professor, your undertaker. I am hereditary chief grass dancer and basket maker. I am standing on the front lines and I am squatting in a tent. Does it not seem strange that on your own land you're required to pay rent, or even more bizarre that you'd be homeless on unceded territory? Come clasp my hand and round dance, join in on ceremony. We are resentful not only for what has happened, but what continues every day. We're angered by overrepresentation in jails and having our children taken away. Does it not seem like history repeating itself, like residential schools the government claimed to know better how to rear, or was it rather knew how to rule? I am the abused partner in a violent relationship whose aggressor is the state. I am one speaking truth amidst a House of Commons completely run by praying men and women with their liberal ideals to dispossess us from our lands, and in exchange making dollars in the trillions going into the richest hands. While all this happens, my body is bound, and I am forced to watch while the fish and moose are dying, my elders' faces remain distraught. But luckily, I am also a stone carver, who every day must sharpen my tools. So in the dead of night, I'll saw off those chains and take with me the jewels. I will bury them beneath the mountain and I'll patch up the open pit mines. I will unpollute the water and wipe away the sludge and crime. I am a custodian to this land. And like a plumber knows its inner workings, like the undertaker knows what's below, and as professor knows who is shirking off their responsibility to the land, as hereditary chief, I understand how restored what's been destroyed and to dance into existence the force to be deployed. As a basket weaver, I will join together my people who are diffuse, bringing them back into our communities. Our love could not be more profuse. As a water polo Olympian, I'll swim to the fishes far below and inform them that they may return to the waters left long ago. As the hockey player, I'll use my agility to throw my weight around, and I can tweet my message to the birds without even making a sound. With the strength of a woman, I will hold that feather high and will never again let any colonialist or developer scoot on by. I will put my physical body in spaces that are in your way, so you'll be obliged to slow down finally and view the wide array of beauty and intelligence I bring to you in my every movement. I was never idle in the first place. I was too busy making improvements. I will resist and educate you with my poise and eloquence. My courage and knowledge will defeat your policied pestilence. I hope you've listened closely, so when I come around, you know who I am. The one you have in mind? Well, I'm not that Indian. Well,
great, thank you. So you spoke a little bit about this piece before, but do you want to elaborate on maybe the significance this piece has to you?
Sure. I mean, I think it has to do with just honoring every single act of resistance, whether you are standing and protesting to just getting up in the morning. The fact is that we have a lot of suicides in our community, so just to wake up in the morning and go through the day and to make it through, that's an achievement in and of itself. And there's so many people doing important things by existing and speaking and being there to do this work. So I wanted people to know it. You don't have to be an indigenous voice. You don't have to be someone on the front lines to be important and to be resisting. So that's what I wanted to honor in that spoken word.
And you started Mimi Guest. Do you want to tell the listeners a bit about this project?
Sure. So Mimi Guest is kind of a business, I guess, that I started. And I've been doing spoken word workshops for a long time and just interacting with youth and older people. So I thought I'd put it into a website so people could easily access contact information if they'd like to have me in. But also, I was thinking, it came to me one night, what if we had our own personal poet? So I wanted to be maybe the next Shakespeare in that way. And wouldn't it be cool if I could put my design work together with creating something that you can put on your wall and have a personal poem on the back? So that's why I came up with that portion of the creation lab of my website. And it's been going pretty well. People really like my work, and I'm excited to start on that. But I hadn't seen that movie called Her until last month, and I started to laugh because his job is pretty much what I would do, like get the information from the people and then put it into a personal poem, and I thought that was kind of cool.
So can you tell us a bit, the logo or the kind of symbol is a butterfly. So do you want to talk a bit about the name and this the symbol for the
Sure.
business?
Yeah, so Mimi Guest is Mi'kmaq for butterfly. And I was actually honored with this scarf here that you can't see on the radio, but it has butterflies on it. And I got it when I was performing for some youth in Haida Gwaii. So it's Haida symbols of butterflies. And I didn't really think much of it at the time. It's beautiful, but it didn't really impact me in terms of my business until about November of 2015, I started to see butterflies everywhere. everywhere. I would see 12 to 15 butterflies a day on the walls or around the city. And one of the teachings that I'd been given in Denende was that butterflies carry memory medicine. So I'm sitting there thinking, what am I supposed to remember? I don't know. And I decided to make that the name of the website because it seemed to mean something. And it wasn't until just last week when I was wearing this scarf and I remembered that butterflies are tied to my poetry. And that's what I was supposed to remember. So in that way, it all kind of came together, and I'm really grateful to have that, and also to let people know that poetry in that way can make memories for people and to memorialize that. So that's why.
So you do spoken word, but you also do poetry and song. So I guess why is this a chosen medium for you and the content you work with?
Well, I think what really resonated with me was the first time I ever heard spoken word was at a workshop when I was 13 or 14 at the time, and it was from an activist, and I had never heard of spoken word before. It wasn't something big when I was younger, and I really liked the way that he was performing and the messages that he was able to convey and have stick in people's head, because it was so nice to listen to. And I wrote my first spoken word by accident. I was trying to write a poem, and I was listening to Kanon, and then it just came out in, like, spoken word form. So that's how my first one really came to be. And since then, I've just been doing it for almost 10 years now. So It's been, and now it's a big thing. Everyone says they're a spoken word artist, but I don't really know if I identify as a spoken word artist. I just want to activate people's minds and in the words that I'm spewing.
Speaking of those words, would you like to perform your other piece?
Sure. So, actually, I have an 11-month son. He's almost 1 year at home, and I wrote this one for him. So, amama is the word in Inuktitut to kind of symbolize breastfeeding. So, when you ask amama kumufi, it means, do you want to breastfeed? Do you want to have some milk? So I wrote this piece for my son, Kyuga. I feel like since the moment I met you, I've asked, Amama kumove? Amama kumove Kyuga? Amama ke? The first week was pain. When neither one of us could gain the upper hand, no matter how hard we tried, blood meeting milk, hard engorged breasts, how could something so natural be so much work? The biggest perk is being able to nourish while staying asleep. The worst part is teeth. Trial and error when you're the sole bearer of the supply. Just when I think you have it figured out, you try something new. Our relationship constantly changing, constantly renewed. Yeah, I guess Leanne was right. Breastfeeding is treaty. Mama kumove kyoka? Mama ke? Oh, how nice it to be so close to you. How flawless to be so easy. No bottles or sterilizers or stoves required. Just pull them out right here. They never expire. But, oh, how difficult it can be to never feel free, to have some time for me and not feel guilty. Mama gumove kyuka? Mama ge? Your older cousin who's 3, still a mamax, just like you. Could we make it that long, baby kulu? We'll see. But for now, let's take our treaty one day at a time. Mama kuma vikyuka? Mama ki?
Great, thank you. That's a really interesting piece. Do you want to talk again kind of about the significance of that for you? Or yeah, I think it's pretty clear how it came about.
Yeah. I mean, breastfeeding is something really difficult, and I don't think it's necessarily that way for everyone, but for many women I know, they have a hard time at first, and it can be really discouraging, which I think is kind of like a treaty. And that was actually words in Leanne Simpson's book, Dancing on Our Turtle's Back, and that was a teaching she was given about breastfeeding when she was going through it. And I really agree with it, because a treaty is not always easy. When it's working right, it's beneficial for everybody, right? Breastfeeding will help in so many ways for the child's future. But when it's has that difficulty as being so integral to the experience, you can really resent the other partner in it. And obviously you love your child, but when you're in so much pain, you just want it to be over. And I think that's kind of a stage that that I feel like we are right now in the treaty process in Canada, is that people don't really want to be in this form of treaty, mm-hmm. because it's so much work and it's so hard and there's so much resentment in place, and we just need to work through that, but you need to have both partners willing to pull the same amount and to not bite you or cause you pain. Right. So that's kind of the symbolism in that, but also really just a personal reflection to my own son about how I feel about it at this point in time. I might feel different later.
Mm-hmm. So we'll get to kind of your upcoming events and performances in a minute, but something I just wanted to ask you about to elaborate on for the audience is one of your passions is in the revitalization of Indigenous language. Do you want to talk I guess for listeners who aren't really familiar with this, do you want to talk a bit about it?
Sure. I have a whole thesis about it. I mean, there's so many different ways that language revitalization can take place. I think what's really interesting and what's been doing really great work so far are language houses, where people go to immerse themselves in the language. I know that it's happening in Squamish and also in Anishinaabe, but there's language nests all around the country in different languages. And I think one thing to note is that there are, I believe it's over 60 or maybe like within the 50s range, indigenous languages in Canada. I don't think people realize how many distinct languages there are. And when the budget came out, Christy Belcourt had a really interesting tweet about how we have to value indigenous languages more, and the government has to put more funding into it, because the fact is that our languages have been studied to death, literally. So what we need now is life in the speaking of them. And we need practical ways that we can do that. And so that's why I think what people are doing all around the country, whether it's translating Robert Munch books into Mi'kmaq, or just speaking with their children, or learning a word of the day, those are all really important. And something that I was listening to from an elder, though, is to realize that we're not just mimicking sounds. We actually have to go further than that and understand a different worldview. There's not a direct translation to a different way of thinking. So that's kind of a process of decolonization. And I think when we start to do that, yes, it seems like a lot of work to learn a language, but it needs to have practical implications. Mm-hmm. Applications.
Implications and applications. So does this, your kind of passion for language revitalization, how central is that to your own spoken word, or your, I guess, desire to do spoken word?
Yeah, well, I just recently, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, started to write in Mi'kmaq. And the way that I've been doing it is there's an online dictionary and they have phrases. And so what I'm trying to do is understand the phrase and then link it to other concepts that could go together and make poetry or music out of that. And I think that once people start to listen to music, it's a really great way to learn language. So I think that's a really great way to transmit language and to help facilitate the learning process. So that's how I do it.
And also for listeners, the first spoken word performance that you heard, there will be a video put up by Resolution Pictures.
Yeah, so I filmed that a couple of months ago. So if you'd like to see that spoken word again, it'll be on Resolution Pictures' website. And it's really great what they're doing, so I'd learn more about that as well.
Would you like to close the show with a final performance?
Sure. This piece, speaking of language revitalization, is in Mi'kmaq, and it's my newest piece, and I hope that I understood the essence properly, and I'm going to run it by a few of my friends who are language speakers to see that I have it right, but this is the way that it is now. So I'll share that with you. And it's called Gesk Mabulgi Gwadu, which means I make it vanish by magic.
Guess my boo gig what do, guess my boo gig what do, guess my boo gig what do, guess my boogie, what do guess my boogie, what do guess my boogie, what do get you quite somehow? Guess my boogie, what do they guess? Do what do so? Hey, guess my boogie, what do they? Gay, gay, do like a seed, discuss, but on the honey, bunu, ha. Now, a big squid on the stuart, gagina. Mooey, make a canoe, the messy of the stuart, hey, discuss, the stuart, hey, hey. Guess my boogie, what do 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 get a gaggy at this Christmas moon in Jigsta Google. I suit on my swaddle. This cook milk which I sit ala. Soon a mama won't wait. Men from men me out of bus. None of me got me. They'll tell me he. Guess my boogie, what do guess my boogie, what do guess my boogie, what do. Guess my boogie, what do guess my boogie, what do guess my boogie, what do. Get a baggy at this Christmas moon in Jigsta Google. I suit on the swaddle, get scoop milk which I sit a la. Send a mama while when and me out of us, none of me. I think they'll tell me he. Guess my boogie, what do? 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 Guess my boogie, what do?
That was awesome. Thank you. All right. So we're coming to the end of today's edition of Dragon Root Radio. For listeners who want to learn more about Tiffany and the amazing work that she does, you can check her out at Mimi Guess
Poetry.
Do you want to?
It's a little confusing. It's on Wix, so it's not exactly. I didn't buy the domain. So just type in Tiffany and Mimi Guess on Facebook. You can direct link from there.
So we've come to the end of today's edition of Dragon Root Radio, but be sure to tune in next week.
Snowstorm in a town you forgot. I take advantage of a warm car and I recess my life. So many years I've given up and now my youth seems shy. I take my place among the truckers and I show them what I got. I told the stripper at the bar that the shots we got were magic. Make a wish now come true. As she smiled, a golden tooth glint in the she wished for, I just wish for you. They say everything is possible.
this. I never meant to cause you pain. And sweet, sweet forgiveness, you can come back, but it's never the same.
Folks at CKUT love their 100% certified organic and fair trade gourmet coffee from Saint-Tropez. Prepared in the heart of Montreal with beans from all over the world, you can find and get your own cup of freshly brewed Saint-Tropez coffee from AUS Snacks on McGill campus or from Café Saint-Tropez on the corner of Saint-Urbain and Duluth.
I need a fresh cappuccino with a mocha twist. Fresh, fresh cappuccino with a mocha twist. Fresh, fresh cappuccino with a mocha twist. Hey, hey, miss.
COVID-19. We must all continue to respect public health guidelines and follow self-isolation instructions. Self-isolate if you have symptoms. Self-isolate after testing. Self-isolate if the test is positive. Self-isolate when you return from a trip. And self-isolate when you've been in contact with someone who's tested positive. Self-isolation is important. Please, take it seriously. Learn more at quebec.ca/self-isolating. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening, Montreal. I'm your host, Nick Schofield, and you are listening to Underground Sounds. Broadcasting at 90.3 FM, online at ckut.ca, I'm going to be with you for the next 2 hours playing all Canadian independent music with a local focus on artists from Montreal. This time of year, there's a lot of change in the air. The days are getting shorter and the leaves on the trees are beautiful, but also slowly leaving us. So with this new season of